listening to the Survival in Motion podcast. Learn, adapt, prepare, survive.
Hello, everyone. This is author Cal Wilson for another episode of Survival in Motion, the podcast. This is actually going to be a pretty somber podcast because I'm going to be addressing what I know of the Korean concerns. That's what I'm calling it anyway. Here's the problem. North Korea weekly or at least monthly lobs a missile towards Guam or over Japan or somewhere in the Pacific Ocean. And these missiles are not exactly that reliable. You know, North Korea has had missiles that have blown up on the launch pad in the past. And it's extremely dangerous when North Korea sends a missile over Japan. If there's something that goes wrong with that missile and then the missile lands somewhere in Japan, that could get incredibly ugly very fast. The head of Japan and President Trump would be saying, our hands might be tied, we're going to have to shoot back, you know? So it could get incredibly ugly. And just yesterday, I think it was, the foreign minister of North Korea said, I'll tell you what, because of Trump's speech at the UN, I think we're going to detonate a hydrogen bomb somewhere in the Pacific. And I know the Pacific Ocean is a big ocean and all, but at any given time, there are a ton of ships going through. There are container ships. I know from the research of my book, EMP, The End of the Grid as We Know It, there's an app out there that shows all the different container ships that are going between East Asia and the west coast of the U.S. And it shows a map, and you'd be amazed at how many ships were constantly going back and forth carrying containers. And forget about container ships, even airplanes going back and forth. If they blow off one of these hydrogen bombs and there's an airplane nearby or a ship, whatever, that's a lot of dead people right there. It's extremely dangerous rhetoric that these people from the north are saying. So if the missiles that are being shot in the direction of Guam, what happens if they don't run out of fuel when they're supposed to and they make it all the way to Guam and land on some population there? That's extremely dangerous. So the question on this podcast is this. Are we really facing a nuclear exchange ahead between the United States and North Korea? And while I still think the chances are less than 50-50, I have to give my best answer, knowing what I know and knowing what I've been following, is maybe. You know, it's possible. So that's what I'm going to be talking about in this podcast here. The Korean War never really ended in 1953. There's just a ceasefire. Kim Jong-un is leader of North Korea, and a lot of people don't understand this, but he's worshipped as a god in North Korea. And a lot of people might think, that's ridiculous. Why would people in North Korea believe this propaganda? Well, just look at American college students who are subjected to propaganda for 3, 4, or 5 years, and they graduate typically about as far left as there is in American society today. And that's just because of a few years of propaganda. Well, imagine getting a whole lifetime of propaganda about Kim Jong-un being a god and worthy of being worshipped. And you can see how it would take hold in people. So propaganda does work. I hate to say it. In my own college career, I kind of had a pet study of dictators and how they get to power and how they lose their grip on power. Basically, a dictator has no right, and they know it. They have no legal right. They have no right that they can call a legal right to be in power of their country. They've just shot up as many people as they can, and they've intimidated everybody else into giving them this power over the country. And at least a monarch can say, I'm head of the church here, or I've been elected by the House of Lords, or whatever. A president can say, I've been elected by the, maybe not the popular vote, but at least the Electoral College. There's something in place that says how a president is elected. And same for a prime minister. You can say, well, a majority of the party vote in the parliament has elected me. But a dictatorship, the closest they can say is, I've got a philosophy here, and it's a lot of times it's Marxism or whatever. It doesn't really matter. They're basically killers and gangsters, dictators are. And the way they lose their grip on power is they become less ruthless or sometimes even freedom-oriented, like Gorbachev in the Soviet Union. And a lot of people forget this, but he was becoming very open and allowing rights for Soviet citizens inside Soviet Russia. They tried to depose him at one point. He was kidnapped for a few days. He made it back alive, but that's how dictators lose their grip on power, is they become less ruthless. Like Ceausescu in Romania, he just barely opened the door to a little bit of freedoms in Romania, and the powers that be there, the military, decided this guy's losing his grip on the power, and after a really quick trial, Ceausescu and his wife were shot to death. So they have to be ruthless in order to stay in power, and occasionally they have to have, a dictator has to have purges of those in the higher up level of the military, and that way they can remain in power. Of course, military people are always watching the dictator nearby, wondering if maybe this guy's losing his grip on power, or maybe the dictator needs to be ousted and it could be a military junta of some sort. Another way dictators lose their grip on power is when they gamble on disputes that are outside their borders. Like, for example, Hitler or Saddam Hussein, if they had just concentrated inside their borders and internal keeping control and so forth, then they could have stayed in power. But when they take a gamble on disputes that are outside their borders, that's when they can also lose their grip on power. Now, the problem with that is not only that the dictator loses, I mean, in the process, when the dictator loses his grip on power, millions also can die. And I guess I didn't say that right. When a dictator gambles on disputes outside of their country, it's good that the dictator loses their grip on power. But the bad news is that millions outside the country can die. And the classic example is World War II. Hitler was solidifying his hold on Germany from inside. And there were a number of... He was being pretty ruthless and could have stayed on as dictator, aka Chancellor of Germany. But when he started gambling on disputes outside of his country, that's when he became... Eventually, he lost his grip on power as well, and millions of people lost their lives as well. Anyway, in this Korean dispute, it's amazing to me how many issues are being ignored by the media and how many issues we're not discussing when we discuss what's going on in Korea. And I'm going to bring them up right now. EMP, which is when a nuclear bomb is shot up in the upper atmosphere or in outer space and detonated, then that will emit a lot of gamma rays, aka radiation. And what happens then is called Compton scattering. The gamma rays knock off electrons in atmospheric molecules, and those electrons all at the same time are attracted to the Earth's magnetic field at the surface of the Earth. And so that creates a huge radio wave of energy downward, and it collapses. It destroys anything that runs off of electricity. So if a nuclear bomb is detonated 30, 40 miles straight up above you, you might not feel it. You might see a flash. But all that you're going to experience, I'm talking 10 to 20 kilotons, a relatively small nuclear bomb, but you will notice everything around you that is powered by electricity is gone. That's how it works. It's speculated that there might be some EMP satellites that North Korea has circling the globe right now. I personally don't think that they have nuclear bombs in those satellites. But in my book, EMP, The End of the Grid as We Know It, just in the first few pages, there are some internet links that you can press on, and you can see exactly where over the Earth those two satellites are. And obviously, if North Korea was going to detonate a nuclear bomb in outer space to cause an EMP on the United States, they would wait until that satellite was directly above, say, Nebraska or Kansas, somewhere around there. That way, it's high enough so that it will even affect the east and west coasts of the U.S. as well as the middle of the country. I don't think that that's a possibility because I don't think those satellites circling the globe have nuclear weapons in them. Although North Korea has been pretty vague about what is in those satellites. All right, another thing North Korea could do is launch a straight-up EMP, meaning a missile could go straight up from inside its own country of North Korea, and when it gets very high in the atmosphere, it could detonate the nuclear bomb, and then that could cause an EMP, obviously, on North Korea. North Korea does not have that much, relatively speaking, that much semiconductors and electricity, but South Korea would be hit with a huge EMP, and South Korea would have a grid down situation, as well as the United States military bases in the area. They would also be harmed, and possibly even Japan would face a grid down situation. And that would be, again, from North Korea shooting a nuclear-tipped missile straight up from inside its own borders. And the United States military would be much less inclined to try to shoot it down if North Korea were shooting a missile straight up from inside of its own borders. Here's another issue that nobody talks about. The South Korean city of Seoul has about 10 million people, which is the 16th largest city in the world. It is only 35 miles from the border with North Korea. So let's stop right there. That's within conventional weapon distance. So in other words, the artillery, the conventional weapon artillery from North Korea could hit South Korea. And forget about nuclear bombs for a while, just conventional weapons. North Korea could start laying waste to Seoul pretty easily just with conventional weapons. Let me talk about the North Korean army. It is estimated that North Korea's active military personnel stands in the area of 1 million people. Those are 1 million people in uniform, all right nearby the border with South Korea. This makes it the fourth largest army in the world, just under India, the U.S., and China. And the reserves and paramilitary units would add another 7.5 million troops for North Korea. And that is in the face of 35,000 American soldiers or military people in South Korea and 522,000 South Korean soldiers. So it's pretty lopsided as far as personnel go. The good news is that North Korea has some pretty outdated or old weaponry. And the bad news to that good news is that that might be all they need, because conventional weapons, like I said, can attack a city 35 miles on the other side of the border. All right, here's another issue that no one is talking about as far as North Korea. And let's forget about nuclear weapons for a while. In February of 2017, Kim Jong-un ordered the assassination of, I think, his stepbrother in the Kuala Lumpur airport. Some North Korean operatives smeared some gel on the face of Kim Jong-un's stepbrother. Kim Jong-un considered this guy a threat. The gel that was smeared on this guy's face mixed together to come out to be VX gas, and the guy died. So in other words, North Korea has VX. And VX and sarin gas are the worst nerve agents out there. VX is even worse because it's more difficult to control. Sarin gas is a nerve agent, but after it is used, it evaporates and can dissipate pretty quickly. Not so with VX. There was a lot of mention of VX gas or gel in the movie called The Rock, so check that out. It's mostly accurate as far as what VX can do. VX and sarin gas both cause convulsions, loss of consciousness, paralysis, respiratory failure, and eventually death. The antidote is atropine, which is prescription only, and it has its own set of problems. So VX and sarin gas are both horrible nerve agents. And as far as chemical weapons go, let me kind of review it quickly. Hopefully I'm not going to throw too many people off. This all began in World War I with mustard gas and chlorine gas. They were both mostly irritants and did not kill too many people. They injured a lot of people in World War I. The big chemical weapon in World War I that killed a lot of people was called phosgene gas, and that smelled a lot like freshly cut grass. And phosgene gas was used as a vapor, and it was heavier than air, and it was perfect for trench warfare, and it killed a lot of people in trench warfare. Up the scale in chemical warfare, or chemical weapons, I should say, is sarin gas and VX. And they're both nerve agents, and they create situations in your body where your nerves are hyper-stimulated, and you eventually die from cardiac arrest or exhaustion. So VX and sarin gas are horrible weapons, and apparently North Korea has VX. And I want to do a shout-out to Stu Magnuson, author of the book Song of Sarin, and recommend that if you're interested in sarin gas, that you read that book called Song of Sarin. I'm doing some research on the sequel to my EMP book, and there will be some parts of that book where sarin gas is used. And I did a lot of research for what happened in the Tokyo subway attack in the mid-90s. A lot of people don't know this, but sarin gas was used, and it was amazing that thousands of people were not killed in that attack. That religious cult M. Shinriko was behind that attack. And that religious cult was found to have enough sarin gas in its headquarters there to kill 4 million people. So sarin gas is bad news. VX is bad news as well. Here's something else a lot of people don't talk about when they're talking about the Korean conflict, and that is just regular old radiation sickness and nuclear fallout. If there's a nuclear exchange that is short of the American West Coast, but still upwind of the American West Coast, that could be a major radiation fallout problem. And for that, I would recommend that people buy and stock up on potassium iodide tablets. I just got 14 tablets on Amazon for $8, 130 milligrams each. What this does, if you take one of these tablets, it will force your thyroid to block the absorption of radiation in your body. So I would buy these potassium iodide tablets and keep buying them and just stock up on them. So nuclear fallout is a possible problem if there is a nuclear exchange anywhere upwind from the United States or Hawaii or Alaska. Well, anywhere. If you're nearby a nuclear exchange, you need to start worrying about fallout. So here's the outcome. Here's my conclusion is if there is a nuclear exchange, if there's a nuclear and conventional exchange, or if there is a nuclear, conventional, and nerve gas exchange, either way, we're talking about millions of people dead. I don't see anything short of that. So that's what we're looking at. I'm sorry to say it, and I hope I'm wrong. North Korea is also working on nuclear missiles that would be launched from its submarines, which would enable these nuclear bombs to get even closer to the United States. So this is something that it's at the time now where we're not able to kick the can down the road as much as we used to. There's some hope in this situation. Number one, I strongly suspect there are some Chinese banks that are helping launder money and keep the North Korean government afloat. It looks like Trump is finally pressuring those Chinese banks to stop helping out North Korea. And North Korea is sanctioned enough so that it could go totally broke without any help from these Chinese banks. And that might be in the process of happening right now. Another sign of hope, and this is just speculation on my part, is what if the United States has some kind of high-tech weaponry that none of us know about that can pinpoint people or the leadership of North Korea and, I don't know, hit them with a laser or whatever. I would be very happy if that were the case. Is that the case for sure? I have no idea. But that's a possible something that we could have that we don't know about. So, here's the deal. When it comes to this North Korean conflict ongoing, stay alert, stay informed, make sure your preps are in order, stock up on these potassium iodide pills. Also, there's a radiation sensor that I have, and I'm going to put in the show notes here how you can buy it as well. It might be good education to read that book, Song of Sarin by Stu Magnuson. And as education and just as fun, it's probably a good idea to watch the movie The Rock, starring Sean Connery from the 90s. That's a good educational movie on VX. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed, well, maybe not enjoyed, but hope you were informed by this podcast. I hope that I'm wrong with a lot of my predictions. I really hope I'm wrong. But anyway, I hope you take my advice and get your preps in order and buy some radiation pills and prepare and get ready for what might happen here. Anyway, I hear the music. That means our time is up. Thank you for joining me. God bless.